Hey, happy Sunday, everybody. My name is Patrick Bergeron. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. I've known Chris since the early 2000s, like he said. He's a guy I love, and he asked me to come in and do the speaker meeting with y'all. This is actually the first time I've ever told my story, and I'm grateful for that. So thank you, Chris. My sobriety date is 12/3/2018, and that's not that long ago. But I'm amazed that I've been able to stay sober since then. I took my last drink at 3 a.m., and it was a Monday morning in my kitchen. I was very, very high on cocaine, and my world had completely fallen apart. That morning, after spending about 3 days in Austin with some old friends and raising hell, I had woken up at a buddy's apartment on the south side, and waking up, I didn't wake up. I never went to bed, but I drove from Austin to Houston, where I live, fucked up out of my gourd to basically try to take one last shot at saving my marriage with my wife. Cause that's what you want to do in that situation, you know? So somehow I was able to make it to my front door in Houston. And I spent, basically a long day of fighting with my wife, trying to keep her, have her not leave me. But basically, I hit my rock bottom at 3 a.m. in my kitchen on that Monday morning. I took a tall boy of beer out of the fridge, and I've been snorting cocaine all day, and I popped the top, and I started drinking it, and I basically decided I had fucked everything up in my life so bad, and I've been living this way at this point, I've been drinking and doing drugs for 23 years, and it was never going to get any better. And I had this idea that, you know, I'm just going to end it. And I tried to kill myself in my kitchen. I used to be a chef type, so I've got some cool knives. I pulled this really big knife out, and I decided I was going to try to cut into myself. But I fucked that up because knives hurt. So I wasn't as numb as I thought I was. And so I couldn't even get that right. I couldn't kill myself right. I couldn't do that. I had to stop, and somewhere in the shame I had of trying to kill yourself, because when you get to that point, you know, I felt really shameful that I tried to kill myself. I had a voice of, and I think it was a dead uncle. I'm pretty positive it was, that basically told me, "Hey man, what are you doing?" And, I pulled my shit together. I went into the guest room in my house where I was sleeping at the time, and because I hadn't moved out yet. And I sweated out the rest of the night. I got up. I went to work. I combed my hair. I put my fucking khaki pants on, and I sucked it up, and I got through the day, and I went to my first AA meeting that night. And that's kind of where the story ends and starts. I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and I know nothing about that place. My father and my mother were both from Houston, Texas, and they both met working for the same company. It's kind of the product of a one night stand. My dad did the, admirable thing and married my mom. And, that was a nightmare for both of them. But within 6 months, we were living back in Houston, Texas, and my dad was working. My mother was taking care of me, but my mom was also looking for a better deal at the time, too. So while she is out and about doing her thing, she meets a young, successful guy who ends up being my adopted dad. And they're all alcoholics, every last one of them at this time. And they're all... And my adopted dad was a drug addict, too, at the time. But I basically ended up being raised by this guy who's my adopted dad. And you know, he turned out to be a great man. He's got about 35 years of sobriety. He went to the program, I think, maybe a little longer, whatever the math is. He went into the program when my sister was born in 85. And he's been a big help to me through this thing right now. But basically that's where the story kind of starts with me. I had a really weird upbringing. So I was adopted by this guy, and here we are, you know, my mom's married to him. They have a brother and sister. And as my dad's getting sober, he can't stay with my mom because she's out of her gourd, crazy all the time. She's doing a lot of drugs. She's drinking. So my dad divorces her, but my dad can't have custody over me. So I get taken to Washington, D.C. away from my brother and sister. My mom has no, like, she couldn't raise a potted plant. God bless her. So basically I'm taken up there. I would come down in the summertime and I'd see my brother and sister when I wasn't in school and kind of get some bit of normalcy in life when I was a kid. And then I'd always have to go back there. And it was kind of hellish. My mom was basically kind of running around DC. My dad, you know, she was collecting alimony from my dad and child support to raise me. But I was on my own. And so I'm running the streets of DC kind of in the late 80s as a kid, which is not really the best place for a kid to be. But you know, I learned survival skills and some of those survival skills kind of followed me into adulthood, and that those things weren't really good. But you know, basically I kind of raised my mother, who was like an alcoholic and an addict and all those things. You know, I would see this shit in my family, you know, and I'd always tell myself growing up, you know, I would never be like that. And I became that. Let's see here. I've got little notes I'm kind of following. You know, so when I really started to kind of get an idea for, you know, what the world was like was kind of living with my mom, and it was at a young age. But she would, it was funny because she would go to AA meetings and she would drag me along. This is before she would leave me really by myself, but she would drag me to AA meetings and I would sit outside of wherever the room was, wherever it was, at a church or in Georgetown in DC, there was an actual AA kind of freestanding building. And I would wait out in the lobby, you know, they're all full of cigarettes, smoke and all that. And she would just, she'd get all tarted up and cruise the room looking for weak, successful men in an AA meeting, man. I mean, she was just, it was a sight to see. And, you know, that was kind of my first experience with AA, was kind of watching my mom work the room after the meeting. But I grew up never feeling right. I never fit in with anything, you know, any family. And that kind of, that shit I never dealt with. So I lived with my mother till she just couldn't do it anymore. And that was probably, I was about 10 years old. And I got shipped off to go live with my uncle in Michigan. And it was a cool thing. It definitely saved my life at the time. I'm about 10 years old and my uncle is raising me. He was a Catholic priest. And as weird as it sounds, it was probably the most normal time in my life ever. It was just me and him and a dog. And he got me back in contact with my dad, who I wasn't allowed to talk to. After a while, then with my mom, and you know, I was going to school and doing all the things, you know, you're supposed to do, but I just never felt like I fit in. By the time I got into high school, I was doing the type of things that people who feel like I do. I was drinking and smoking pot, you know, basically whatever you get your hands on at that age. And that was my coping mechanism because I really didn't like to feel shit. I still don't like to feel shit. I've been sober for almost 2 years. I still don't like to feel a damn thing. But as time moved on and I got through high school, you know, things got a little bit worse, but I went to college. I moved to Austin in late 1997. I went to St. Ed's University and I got through my first semester of college. You know, you go to school and if you've ever had that experience, you meet like-minded people, you know, especially if I came from a small town. I'd gone from living in Washington, D.C. to a small town in Michigan to Austin, Texas. And, you know, you do high school, you know, kind of in a small town area and you're a disaffected kind of punk rock kid. You move to a place like Austin, it's like, holy shit, I found Shangri-La. And I go to school. I get through my first semester and I'm drinking and smoking pot and dropping acid and things like that, doing all the things that, you know, you do. But somehow I managed to make it through my first semester of college because I don't think I'm as dumb as I say I am. I remember I flew home to Michigan my first Christmas after living in Austin, and I thought it was a really wise idea to drop acid at 5 a.m. and get on a plane at the old Mueller Airport and fly to, I had to switch planes at Chicago O'Hare the day before Christmas and then get on a puddle jumper and go to the Toledo, Ohio airport where I was picked up by a buddy I went to high school with. That was not the smartest idea. I think if that had happened after 9/11, I probably would have ended up in jail, but it didn't. I got into my second year of my second, sorry, semester of college, and I got into a really bad car accident that forced me to drop out. We'd gone out for me and some friends. We'd gone out to Paleface Park and we camped, stayed up all night drinking, dropping acid, doing whatever the fuck we had. And I had a buddy that was driving and I had another buddy in the back seat that was sleeping. We were in an old Volvo and we were coming up 71 outside of Bee Cave from Paleface Park. We went down an embankment and hit a tree. And the engine of the Volvo kicked out in my lap and I got a really bad concussion and I had the jaws of life cut me out. And I spent about 3 weeks at it used to be called Brackenridge. I think it's called University, whatever now there. But I had to have major surgery and all this other stuff. And I had to drop out of school, which at the time was really kind of the only thing going for me. And I kind of got back there, but I always had this problem is I never would stop, you know, I would never finish things I started. And I told myself I was going to get through school at least. So I ended up going to ACC for a little bit. And you know, I was able to do classes just fine and whatever. But, you know, I lived in a house with a bunch of other guys and I was like-minded guys, and I was partying all the time and, you know, not thinking anything of it. It was just fun and games. Like I'd almost died, you know, once, but, I never thought I had a problem like in my early 20s. And I keep, you know, meeting like-minded individuals in Austin. I start playing out in the clubs. I start playing music with guys and life was really cool. You know, I met Chris, but Chris was sober, but I was not at all, the farthest thing from it. But, you know, we were still friends, and he taught me an amazing amount about music that I wouldn't have learned on my own, and I'm grateful for that. But being out in the clubs, you know, if you want to find the bad shit, it's there. You know, I've been paid for gigs and bags of blow before and didn't think twice about it. You know, hell, you don't make any money being a musician anyways. This is just a good time right here. You know, that was my lifestyle in my 20s. I mean, I didn't, that's basically, you know, that's all that mattered to me was it was playing music. It was, I was partying and I was having a good time, but you know, I had all these, you know, problems connecting with people. I was always dating the wrong person. You know, my 20s was a really bad on and off relationship with another crazy person. And I never really could achieve the things I wanted to achieve. I always worked shitty jobs just so I could play music at night. And that was great for a while. I mean, it was a good time. But there got to a point, I went back to school after I dropped out. And I decided I was going to become an EMT. And, you know, they actually came to me and they're like, man, you should really go ahead and just get your paramedic. We see some potential in you. And in my head, I'm like, well, you know, that's just more work to do. And it takes away from the shit I like to do. And that's partying pretty much. So I settled for something else. I got a job. I took what training I had and I got a job basically as a field supervisor for a private gas company that ran gas out to a bunch of subdivisions outside of Austin. And, you know, the pay was decent. It kept me in booze and coke. And I could basically do my job hungover because I wasn't around people. And I got away with it. I was getting towards the end of my 20s. And I was living in Austin. And when I got back to school, I met a woman while I was in school. We became friends. And I thought she was fantastic. And I wasn't single at the time, but I thought to myself, if I ever get married, that's the type of woman I want to marry. And pretty quickly after, my relationship fell apart and I came into contact with her again. And I ended up getting married to that woman. She had just graduated her program she was going through, got offered a job in St. Louis. And she actually wants to marry my crazy ass. So I move up there. I follow her there about 6 months later. And I don't know what happened. I was around 30, 31 years old, and shit just got really bad. Up until then, yeah, I was drinking and doing drugs on a regular basis, but I wouldn't even call it daily. And, you know, I found myself in St. Louis. I mean, that city kind of ate my lunch. I was, it's a rough and tumble place. I lived in downtown St. Louis. I worked downtown. At the time I had a job, I was a baker and I was basically, I would clock in at work at 4:30. Sometimes I get off by 12:31 and I was surrounded by bars and I would hit a bar on the way home. You know, I'd be drunk by 2 and that was like every fucking day. And, that was, I mean, hell, 10 years ago. And, of course, wherever you go, I'm good at meeting people and I'm good at meeting the wrong people. So I found, you know, drugs there too, pretty fast. Except for it wasn't as easy as walking into a club on 6th Street or whatever, where I knew everybody and finding somebody. It was, at first, you know, I found myself in one situation. I got rolled one night. I got the shit beat out of me. Trying to buy drugs in downtown St. Louis because that's a smart thing to do. And I was like, you know, that's just the price of doing business, man. You were trying to buy drugs. It was bound to happen sometime, you know. And I came home to my wife and, you know, I think I told her I was hit by a bus or something. You know, I mean, it was something. I didn't tell her I got beat up and you know, $300 stolen. But, shit like that. But that's how I was living. You know, I was drinking every day. I was doing the minimum to get by in life. And here I am, a newly married guy who needs to do something with his life. And things are going along. My wife, I know she's trying to figure out what she can do to try to fix me. But I know she doesn't really understand this part, and that's not, you know, I'm not really going down that road yet, but I have this one memory of walking down. It was a Sunday, and it was like the end of 2013, and it was kind of a cold day, but it was Sunday fun day, and my wife and I were walking down to a bar down the street to grab a bite to eat, and I was about to start into my daily ritual, and I looked at my wife, and I had this moment of clarity, and we were at a stoplight, and a crosswalk. We were crossing, but the light was red. And I looked at her and I said, "Honey, I think I'm an alcoholic." And she kind of had this glazed look on her eyes. And she didn't really say anything back to me. And we just went about our business and didn't really bring it up again. But I got a lot worse. I kind of told myself right then and there, like, I'm an alcoholic. And I probably should have done something at that point. So that's end of 2013. But I didn't. I continued to rock and roll pretty hard. And, you know, they say this thing's a progressive disease. I can attest to that. I mean, it is a progressive disease. I saw basically my consumption of alcohol, you know, I could really put back a lot and you know, really... I mean, shit's poison, and I could, you know, I could bang back an 18 pack of beer and not really think anything of it. Or, I could drink a good amount of a bottle of vodka. I like vodka a lot because, you know, you can lie to yourself and you don't think people smell it on you. And also it's really easy to drink. I never could drink the, you know, whiskey would fuck my stomach up, and so would some bourbon, and I didn't really care for those that much, but you know, watery beer, I could throw a shit ton back, and same, you know, with vodka and stuff like that. And it was, I felt like it was a lot less for me to get caught. And also I could keep my facilities about me. At least I thought I could, you know, to where people didn't think I was drunk, but other than that, you know, I had some cool stuff going on in St. Louis. I'd gotten to know, I started cooking in restaurants up there because the economy wasn't the best time, and kind of finding a job was the easiest thing. And I was like, well, you know, I know how to cook. And I was hanging out with some cool chefs, and I was working in some cool restaurants, but working in that line of business, you know, you can kind of work fucked up. And if you're getting your shit done, people don't mess with you. So I could go to work and sneak out to the car and take a few pulls, you know, and take a couple key bumps. And as long as I'm getting, you know, brunch service out or dinner, it doesn't fucking matter. And I was always able to do my job. It gave me the opportunity, you know, a lot of guys taught me, I knew how to cook, but a lot of guys really taught me how to cook there. As we're going through in St. Louis, things start to change. My wife gets offered a job here in Houston with the big hospital system, Methodist. So we move here. My family's here. Her family's here. We end up buying a house, which I was drunk when I signed the papers. I didn't know fucking dick about a mortgage, you know. But here I am. I took a job working for a pretty cool restaurant. And I was learning more, but, you know, it was a big kitchen and I was moving up in the ranks, and I was kind of, you know, it's like right under the chef, and, you know, they were wanting to move me to other restaurants that were in the corporation. And I couldn't see myself going forward, because I could never see myself going forward with anything. And then in 2016, towards the end, I got really sick, and I had they found this I was basically about to have an aneurysm right side of my heart on my aorta. And, which means, you know, it detaches, it's called an aortic dissection. You die really fucking fast. You know, it's usually, if it happens, if it doesn't happen in a hospital, you're kind of, you're fucked. But they found it on me. They did an echo on me, which is what my wife does for a living. They did an echo on me, and I had to quit my job. I had to basically live like a veal. Couldn't, you know, pick up anything over 10 pounds until I could get this one surgery done, which I had to go to the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio to have done. Because I didn't want to have an artificial valve put in me, or I'd have to take medication the rest of my life. You think that shit would slow me down, but it didn't. It made me worse. I was sitting around off of work for 2 months until I could get that surgery, drinking and snorting Coke when I'm about to have open heart surgery. We go up to Cleveland to have the surgery, and one of the worst hangovers I ever had in my life was in the OR room before I got my chest cut open. I can only attribute it to God that I was able to have it done and didn't die, because if I hadn't had it done at that point, I would have died really quick. But I'd gotten drunk and ran off in the city of Cleveland and got into a big fight with my wife the night before I had fucking open heart surgery. Yeah, I made it through. Then I got back to Houston, and it just got worse and worse. I mean, my recovery was like a month, and I was snorting Coke already a week being home and drinking. I decided I couldn't work in a kitchen anymore because just my body couldn't take it. And I've got an outgoing personality, so I got into sales, and it suits me. And also at the time, I could still drink and do drugs at sales. People don't piss test you, man. As long as you're making your numbers, it doesn't matter. And, you know, I was drinking before I go to work. I was drinking on my, you know, lunch break, shit like that. You know, I felt like I could get away with it. And then in August of 2018, I fucking get sick again. But this time it's not my heart. I ran up to my office on a Saturday morning because somebody was wanting to buy insurance from me, and I helped them out. And I was like, man, my stomach doesn't feel good. I ran across the street to Walgreens. I got some Pepto, like that was going to help. And by the end of the night, I'm in the emergency room, and they're checking me into the hospital because I have these three large abscesses in my stomach, and I am about to go septic, of which I did. The night before, I'd stayed up partying and drinking like I always did. And, you know, they kind of prepped my wife for the worst. They're like, we don't think he's going to make it through this. And yet somehow I did. I felt like I had died while I was in the hospital, but I didn't. And what was really fucked up was I was angry I didn't die. And that's how I felt that way. I just felt kind of, I felt like I was supposed to cross over. I was in the hospital for 2 weeks. But when I got out, it was like the first time I decided I'm going to be sober. I can't live like this anymore. And I didn't think about going to rehab or AA or anything like that, or even reaching out to anybody. I just thought I was going to do it on my own because I'm a man and I can fucking do this shit. But I stayed sober for 28 days, but I wasn't really sober because they sent me home with opiates because I was obviously in pain from all the shit they had done to me in the hospital. That was like low-grade opiates, but, you know, I wasn't sober, but I thought I was. I just wasn't drinking for 28 days. That script ran out, and on the 28th day of that script running out, you know, I'm trying to live this normal life with the woman I'm married to. We went to a cheese bar out in Katy, Texas. And there I am sitting, sipping a glass of rosé, trying to act like a normal human being. And you know, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, see, you can do this, Patrick. And no, that wasn't the case at all, because later that day, you know, hour or two later, I was at another bar. I was drinking, taking shots, and I was making phone calls, and I got what I was looking for, right to cocaine. So from that point, basically, that was like Labor Day weekend of 2018. You know, from then up until December 3rd, I basically, of 2018, I was like a freight train from hell. I was, I mean, I don't think I was sober at all. You know, there was very little moments where I didn't have some type of substance inside of me. But what it all kind of came down to was my anniversary was on November 3rd, and my wife gave me my walking papers on that day. She basically said, I can't watch you do this anymore. I can't be, you're killing yourself, and I can't do it. And, you know, thinking about it now, I don't blame her. But I fought hard to try to keep her. And I know I only have about 10 minutes left, so I don't want to talk about the bad shit anymore. I really want to talk about the solution. I started this out talking about, you know, when I went to my first AA meeting, and I showed up. I was a mess, and here I am embarrassed because I had tried to fucking kill myself, and every decision I made in my life had been wrong, it seemed like, and, you know, just about as broken as you can be. And I'm thinking I'm going to walk into this room, and there's going to be a shit ton of people, and I walk in, and it's me and the guy leading the meeting, and that's it. And so I listened to him talk for 45 minutes, and then he asked me some questions. And, you know, I already knew I was an alcoholic, and I mean, I knew I was a drug addict. And there, you know, he told me the things that, you know, you're supposed to say to a newcomer when they come in is, look, man, listen for the similarities, go to 90 meetings in 90 days, all that shit. I did all that shit. You know, my wife had left me, and I was taught acceptance pretty early on in the program. I accepted that and just move on. You know, I had to get my life back together. But, you know, I went to, by about my third meeting, an old timer took me aside and took some interest in me. And he was like, hey man, you know, because I'm gonna tell you how this thing works. You know, this is what you should do. He's like, get a sponsor, start working the steps. That's exactly what I did. That's the only thing I know how to do. I didn't have any concept of God when I came into the program or anything like that. But I got a sponsor, and he told me this thing, and you know, he's like, you know, he goes, you're going to work these steps, and you're going to have a spiritual experience. And fuck that guy, because he's right. I did. I mean, like, I had a massive spiritual experience. I did everything like any newcomer does. I got to step four and I sat there and twiddled my thumbs for, you know, months on it, to the point of where it almost made me nuts and I walked away from the program, but I didn't. I actually got through it. And I'm grateful I did that. I made my amends to everybody I could, except for my uncle who raised me, because he's dead. I had to bury him in 2018. And I had a big amends to make to him, but my spiritual experience came in the form of this. I was leading a meeting on a Tuesday morning, and that small town of Michigan I grew up in, there's a college there that my uncle did a lot of work with, and, he knew a lot of the administration there. But this kid comes into an AA meeting and needs to get a paper signed. So, you know, I'm leading the meeting and I sign his paper afterwards, and you know, he's like, hey, I'm down here for a holiday. You know, I'm from Cypress, Texas, but I'm actually going to college in this little place in Michigan. And I go, where are you going to college, man? I know Michigan well. He goes, I'm going to a place called Hillsdale College. And I was like, man, I go, that's where I'm from. And he basically told me why he was there at that AA meeting. He got in trouble, and the dean of men basically said, look, You got this choice of going to AA or we're going to expel you out of school. So he was getting his, you know, thing signed. And I was going through this kind of thing at the moment where I couldn't give an amends to my uncle because he was dead. And also I had to, I know I'm running out of time, so it's really hard to go into all this. I had to give over power of attorney to this one guy who's from this college. He's one of the administrators there because I was in no shape or form to take care of my uncle towards the end of his life. And that guy's name was Aaron Peterson. And this kid standing in front of me, and Aaron Peterson had ordered this guy to go to AA. You know, it's a small world is what I'm trying to say. But that was a fucking spiritual experience for me. That was basically like my uncle saying, accepting my amends, or at least I'd like to think that. I have God in my life. It's not religious. I'm not a, I was raised Catholic, but I don't believe in any of that stuff. But I got to give it over to my higher power every morning when I wake up. I do what I was taught in AA. I've been like a little malleable piece of clay. You know, I get up every morning and I basically got to say, hey man, you're running the show. Please direct my thinking. And every time I do that and I get out of my own ego, I'm able to get through the day. You know, being sober, it doesn't mean that you're not going to have another shitty day, because God damn it, there's a lot of shitty days that come up. But I find out if I don't take anything to basically change my thinking or my being, I can get through that day. This is the first time I've ever told my story, and there's so much shit I'm realizing I'm leaving out. But all I can tell you is this, is that I have about this much knowledge of how this shit works, but I understand what it means to be a grateful alcoholic today. And I think if I can stay that way tomorrow, I'm probably going to stay sober. I know, Chris, you said, you know, we're getting kind of close to the end there. But I'm incredibly grateful to be where I'm at today. My wife and I are still together. She kind of saw a change in me about 3 months into the program. That was one thing too, you know. My last day of drinking, her and I got into this awful fight and I blacked out. But I remember one part of it was she told me the type of man I was, and I never believed that I was that man. And in that moment, I realized it was all fucking true. But, you know, here we are. It's 2 years later, and we've gotten through that. We're still together, and, you know, life's life. It there's peaks, there's valleys. But when shit gets hard, I don't have to fucking drink over that shit today. And I have a self-awareness of who I am. You know, a beer sounds good, but if I pop a top, there's 240 bags waiting for me at the bottom. That's just how it is with me. You know, I have that awareness about myself now. And I have a comfort about that too. And I'm also, you know, I'm lucky. I know guys like Chris. I called him after I went to my first AA meeting, you know, because when guys like me bomb out, you fucking call Chris. And I love you for that, man. And with that, I think there's about a minute left. I'm going to throw it back at you. I really appreciate y'all listening to me. I hope it somewhat made sense. If you're a newcomer, for fuck's sake, please come back. You know, these rooms, AA, I know the Zoom thing's been crazy, but whatever, AA, NA, you know, you meet people of your own ilk. It's the safest place on earth. I'm grateful for the people I've met. You know, a few of them got on here from Houston tonight, and Craig, Wayne, Mark, I love you guys. They've been like in my foxhole with me, and I'm there with them. And that's how this thing works, is you help other people out, you get out of self. And I'm just grateful to be here. So much love. We're going into the holiday season. Put some gravy on that shit and be grateful for what you got. That's all I got. Thank y'all.
It was a very great story. You did great. Thank you, Patrick.
Thank you, Patrick.